Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Cats Report in the Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Weekly, and I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group. Joining me once more is the reliably vivacious Tricia McCrone. Tricia?
Thank you, Katzy.
What's going on over there?
Two things. One, let's hope that Wayne Newton is still leading the football pool, since he sings
Wayne
our theme song.
Wayne is a factor.
Yes, he was number one last week, and we don't know this week because right now you are at our Macau bureau.
I'm in the enclave of Macau.
Yes, at
this
Cats of the Dish Macau bureau.
As you listen
bureau.
To this, I'm yes. in the Cats Report, Cats with the Dish, everything other bureau in at the Venetian.
So now,
Macau.
Why are you in Macau? This is, I mean, you know, obviously Macau is a mecca of another casino town. It's kind
Mecca
of rival, trying to rival us here in Las Vegas.
You know, actually, in terms of gambling profits, Macau is number one in the world by a lot.
Well, a lot of our whales, a lot of our money were Asian players.
Mm-hmm. They stay, it's funny. One thing I'm hoping to find out as I'm over there is if Macau is reaching out to the American tourists the same way that American resort companies are reaching out to China.
I don't think so.
I would think not.
Because they've got all the people from the Asian population.
And that culture is defined. They like to play. They like to gamble. They really enjoy it, and they have for centuries. They're legendary for that. And all the anecdotal stuff that I've heard about table games in Macau, I'm going to try and observe while I'm over there. And that's like, you know, people lined up at Baccarat and blackjack tables four or five deep to just have action on somebody else's game.
Yes, you know, actually, when I was in Australia,
mm-hmm.
I think it was at the Crown Casino, which there I found out from one of our guests from last week.
Ross Mollison.
That the Crown Casino that you will be visiting in Macau is the same as the gorgeous one that is in Melbourne that I've been to. But I actually did play where people were piggybacking on me.
Yeah.
And you play differently. Because I love to play blackjack and I love to, but I found myself being nervous because a guy was betting, let's say, $10 a hand, and a guy had a $100 chip on top of my hand. So not only am I making the decisions for me, but this guy behind me, and I didn't like it. I didn't like that I was playing my game based on his game.
Right, right. That's what they do. So what I'm hoping to find is get a glimpse into that culture while I'm there. Figure out what we do better than them and vice versa.
Well, we like feng shui and our hotels in that, trying to attract
exactly.
the Asian player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want that market, but that market is being satisfied in its market. And one thing I know, we do nightclubs here in a way that they don't care to there. Our clubs are spectacular, obviously. And their nightclub experience is more like the karaoke bar.
I was just about to say, there's a lot
that's
of karaoke.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they do.
Which I love.
So, but there's a lot to be reported. It's a, peg to the Manny Pacquiao, Brandon Rios fight that's going to be happening Saturday on pay-per-view here. And
you're
very early
one
Sunday
of like
morning.
10 journalists in the world.
Very few,
I mean, the country.
Yeah,
the
very
world,
few
the
are being invited.
Yeah,
exactly. Very few are being invited to do this under the rate that we're being offered.
It's a very big coup.
It is. I'm lucky, man. Very fortunate to be able to do this. And
as this airs, I'm missing you. Oh, you may be back by the time this airs.
I will be back.
Okay. Then I will be happy you're
Sunday
back.
Monday night, actually. So I'm not here yet.
Okay.
As someone far wiser than I once said, don't put me on no time machine. All right. Let's get to the...
I got no time for that.
Get to the show. We have coming up as our guest this week is the multifaceted frontman for the Swingin' Pedestrians, and he does so many other things, named Tony Feliceta. He's going to be joining us. But first, we have Josh Bell with movies, so stick around. I know we're gonna...
This is Ross Mollison, producer of Absinthe, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish.
You haven't heard people get this. You've given them an opportunity. They just have to be brave enough to take it.
We have to go, Gail, before they kill us. They will kill us.
What about the other families? Huh? The ones who stay. What happens to them? People are looking at you, Cat.
I don't want anyone looking to me.
That's Jennifer Lawrence as steely teenager Katniss Everdeen and Liam Hemsworth as her love interest Gail Hawthorne in the sequel The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. In Catching Fire, Katniss is suffering from both PTSD and survivor's guilt after triumphing in the previous edition of The Hunger Games, a contest in which children are forced to fight each other to the death. She and fellow victor Peeta Mellark, played by Josh Hutcherson, end up conscripted into a sort of all-star version of The Hunger Games, competing against past winners of various ages. Catching Fire is impressive in scope, full of dazzling special effects and elaborate action sequences. Yet it moves the story forward only incrementally, and its efforts at social commentary are muddled. I give The Hunger Games Catching Fire 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Delivery Man, starring Vince Vaughn as a loser who discovers he has inadvertently fathered 533 children via sperm donation.
It's not possible. It is impossible to be the father of 533 children.
It is impossible to be the father of 4 children.
Right, exactly. It's impossible. But I can be their guardian angel.
Delivery Man awkwardly mixes tame humor with disingenuous sentiment, and neither method succeeds. Vaughn tones down his typical manic shtick, but his emotional moments aren't convincing, especially when the supporting characters, both the children and the main character's girlfriend, are completely one-dimensional. I give Delivery Man 2 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is the frontman for the Swingin' Pedestrians, who play Tuesdays at Sin City Theater at Planet Hollywood. The show is called The Rumpus Room, and it's part of the Hi-Fi Nights that happen at 10:30 p.m. after that room's comedy lineup. He also plays Ringo in the Beatles show at V Theater at Miracle Mile Shops. He's about to portray Dean Martin in a show at Four Queens Canyon Club downtown, and is Elvis Presley at Special Memory Wedding Chapel, also downtown. Welcome to Cats with a Dish, the multifaceted Tony Felicita.
Well, how you doing there?
Wow, Tony, so let's just rewind.
Okay.
Do this interview as Tony until otherwise.
I will be Tony,
people may get confused exactly who you are because you are Ringo.
Yeah, I get confused sometimes.
You're Ringo, you're Dean, and you're Elvis.
And a few other things too, but we won't mention that.
Your front man in the Swingin' Pedestrians is sort of that's another personality.
Yeah,
it's an unspecific
personality. That's actually the real me, you know, if you want to get down to it. That's the thing that I really, really enjoy. Although, you know, of course I love doing all the other things, but that is basically me on stage being me.
Thing. That show is your baby,
right? That's my baby. That's what I've been working on for a while and really trying to launch it up into, you know, the Vegas scene.
So. Yeah. Well, when I first saw that, this was at the Plaza at the club there, the Swingers Club.
It was Swingers.
Up on the high stage there. And love the set list, love the vibe of it.
Cool.
And then you moved over to the Palms for
a time. We played at the Palms a few times. And we play First Fridays on Fremont Street, the big stage on 3rd Street. Play a few places downtown and just wherever we can. But I've been trying to find like a home where we can do a weekly show where I could call it the Rumpus Room with what we're doing. And so this, with the blessing and the backing from the management there at the Sin City Theater, it's starting to take off. So it's
they've got an interesting lineup going on.
Yeah,
right.
That it's you and what is it? Boogie Wonderland? Is that what you guys said?
Wonder Boogie.
Sorry.
On Wednesdays, yeah.
Wonder Boogie, Purple Rain, who we love, Frankie Perez, who we love. I mean, you guys all have the Sin City Comedy Theater is kind of turning into a little after hours joint.
And they basically launched it all about the same week. They put us and Frankie and Wonder Boogie basically launched it the 1 week so they could say, all right, now we're doing this. And the Prince, the Purple Rain show launched about a week or two before. So it's new for them. So we're kind of all making it up as we go along. It's like, okay, let's try this. Next week, it's like, well, let's try it this way. Let's work on this. And so they're in it with us by both trying to go at it together. So it's new for them. And so that's the beauty of it. It's not like just somebody says, all right, there you go. There's your room. Fill it up with people. Goodbye.
So. Well, you guys are a very stylish band. It's kind of I don't want to say Big Bad Voodoo Daddy type thing, but it's a little bit of a throwback.
Yeah, it's
a swing show.
It's very much a throwback. I kind of consider ourselves, we're not really a swing band. We're not really a rockabilly band. We're not really a 50s and 60s band. We kind of are all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do a lot of 50s and 60s, but we also do 70s, 80s, and even 90s songs. And when we turn them into swingy or swanky tunes our own. So kind of put our own spin on things, you know, like the Addicted to Love that we do. It's morphed with the stripper. We swank it up and have the girls on stage with us.
Yeah, burlesque dancers involved.
That's where I've met you before when I was dancing. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. And,
Addicted to Love, that's what it was.
Yeah, so we do a lot of songs like that. And we just kind of swing them up and make our own style out of it. So we don't really like to be pigeonholed into a certain style because we're not really a swing band, although we swing. It's in our name, so I got to, you know. And we try to make it really just entertaining in the old school vibe of Vegas back in the day when they had, you know, wild lounge bands.
They had people like Elvis and Dean Martin around. I'm still, that cracks me up. So literally, okay, so if I'm going to have a Vegas Elvis wedding experience, Katz and I are getting married in
all right.
this situation.
We can't get married now because he's not ordained.
True.
So I asked him.
Okay, so
whole
now.
Thing's pointless. My whole plan's pointless.
So now,
let's just continue the interview.
If I am going to be
now
here,
it's just a regular
if
interview.
I'm going to be my bride, what exactly are you going to do for me as Elvis?
Well, we will...
And maybe the only opportunity I'll ever have to be a bride, so let's pretend right now.
Well, I walk the bride down the aisle, and then I stop at the front, and the minister says, you know, who gives this bride, you know, away? And I say, the king of rock and roll, mama. You know, and I give her away, and then they start doing some vows, and I sing Can't Help Falling in Love.
Oh my gosh, I love
this. And then they do some more vows. I sing like Teddy Bear, get them to dance around and have some fun with me, and then dudes do a little more. They do their kiss, hit Viva Las Vegas. Done.
Okay, so now are you, what Elvis are you? Like, what era of Elvis are you? Like the 50s? Are you like the jumpsuit Elvis? What?
Well,
the leather?
If I had my choice, you know, I would be the cool Jailhouse Rock 50s Elvis because that's the cool Elvis.
Yeah.
But everybody always wants a jumpsuit. That's what's kind of iconic.
So you're a skinny jumpsuit Elvis.
And I've got a black jumpsuit, so it's kind of the different than the white jumpsuit, fat Vegas Elvis that you'd normally see, you know. I'm a kind of a, what they call a younger, skinnier Elvis in a black jumpsuit. So it's different, you know, a little bit
you
of an alternative.
You could do the all leather, like on the special. Yeah. That was a good, that was a hot
There's
Elvis.
Another guy that works at the chapel, Kent. He's a real good Elvis. He comes out in the gold lame, so that's what he does.
Uh-huh.
He's got, you know, the gold lame jacket and the slacks.
So how many Elvis are at chapel?
There's about three, I think, or four, but there's, you know, all the guys in town have all worked there. Everybody kind of works at all the chapels around. I'm kind of new into the scene, so I'm just working my way in there as
So literally, you'll just, what, you just, are you like a doctor on call? Like you'll just get a page, you know, like we need you?
Well, yeah, they do that, but I'm also scheduled for all these times to come in. But I've gotten the call where it's like, when can you be down here? 40 minutes, you know, let me just clean up and shave.
Let me un-Ringo myself and become it.
So sometimes you do get that call that you're, can you be here today?
I am so fascinated by this, I can't even tell you. This is like.
You know, this is a new thing for you, right?
It is pretty new. Right? Yeah, yeah. My cousin actually runs the chapel. He's the vice president there. And he had asked me, he knows that I sing and I'm front man or whatever.
My cousin runs the chapel.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I got an end to be Elvis.
Yeah.
That's how this works.
And so I've actually gotten him a couple Elvises in the past when I wasn't doing Elvis. And Harry Shahoyne, he's a good friend of mine. He's an Elvis. And I got him in the chapel. You know, Harry.
Rush Lounge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course. Mm-hmm. And so he'd asked me last year sometime, he just said, hey, you know, we've got some Elvises, but would you consider being Elvis for the chapel? And I thought, well, yeah, I love Elvis. I mean, yeah, count me in. I just got to go get a jumpsuit, you know, and then I'll be
You know
it.
What? I could get a good wig and makeup and I would be a really, really good, like Elvis Priscilla.
Yeah, you
like
do,
back
you do
in the
kinda
day,
look like Priscilla. Priscilla. You know,
back in the day, you know, she had the big black bouffant, or you know what I mean, or Anne Margaret. I could throw in red wig. So if you need like somebody to do like you know backup dancing behind you, I'm available.
She was here.
I'll call you up there, Priscilla.
Thank you.
A couple weeks.
Thank
later.
You.
she was here. Priscilla was in town at the Palms.
Yeah. I actually met her because
my
friend that I used to work with when I lived in L.A. at the record store there. We worked together. It's Michael Lockwood, which is Lisa Marie Presley. His husband and we worked together and we'd known each other. He had his band called Lions and Ghosts, and then he went on to play guitar with Amy Mann, you know, from Till Tuesday.
Till Tuesday. Hush,
and then he went on to play with Fiona Apple, and then he went on to play with Lisa Marie Presley. And then one day when I was in LA, I saw the National Enquirer. I was in line at the Rite Aid, and on the cover of the National Enquirer was Michael Lockwood and Lisa Marie Presley holding hands. And I was like, what? What is this? You know? And I was like, because he's been, you know, a friend of mine and a huge Elvis fan and Zeppelin fan or whatever, but he hooked up with
Lisa Marie. He's a big Elvis fan now, isn't he?
Wow. Yeah, he's bigger the father of the twins and whatever. So he had a birthday party. I think it was his 50th in LA last summer, right around the summer. And so he invited me and stuff. I hadn't seen him in a little while, but Lisa Marie and Priscilla were both there. And so it was a great honor to meet them both. And I just had to pinch myself because I saw myself standing there in a circle talking to both of them.
And you knew that the day before you were giving a bride away.
I didn't mention any of that. I wasn't going to mention anything about that.
For the rest of this interview, I'm going to tie back to that.
She would ask if you were a licensed ETA. That's the question. Because those Elvis Presley Enterprise people are like, we support them if they're licensed. If they're not licensed, it's a difference. Story. It's just, but if they're licensed.
Yeah.
Well, I did one of these contests, judged one of the Elvis.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I've done every one of
them
here.
Victor, you had Victor winning.
Yes.
Victor's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he won. Yeah.
He's great.
And Chad
Elvis.
Collins this year was one of the black suited Elvis.
Uh-huh.
And I've done, this was three of them. And honest to God, I've seen 60 of them over the course of time, 60 different Elvis impersonators.
Elvis.
ETAs. And no two are alike.
Wait a minute. That's what's crazy. Stands for?
Elvis Tribute Artist.
Okay.
Yeah, ETAs.
That's sorry, it. I didn't
that's
understand
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's just insider Elvis.
I'm sorry. I didn't get the lingo. I was not given the little handbook.
The thing about Presley is that he had so many different identities. We think of him in sort of, a one-dimensional way.
Yeah.
But when you put that interpretation in the hands of different people, we had all different – no two were alike in any contest.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I know.
Now, how do you address that when you want to do this? I mean, it's weddings, but I mean –
Yeah. I it's basically
about –
Do you do
a lot of studying or
– enough. But I was – when Jake had first – that's my cousin at the chapel. When he had first asked me about it, I thought, oh, my God, I really have to, be the best Elvis out there because these people are hiring me to be Elvis. And I was trying to work on it. A few months later, hey, I'm almost ready. And it's like, after a while, it's like, you know what? Don't sweat it. All they want is just have fun. Just get out there, put the suit on.
Aren't they drunk
have fun
anyway?
With the people. No, they're not
I'm
really
just
drunk.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
But it's basically about, you don't have to be the greatest Elvis impersonator.
Are you drunk right now, or is that cough medicine?
Somebody's
drunk.
I will admit I'm under the influence of major cough medicine right now while I'm doing the interview. So I'm making a disclaimer.
We mask it well
for
around
everybody.
Here.
Yeah, yeah. All of my questions seem to be very one-dimensional.
Oh, that's okay. But so he basically said, it's all about just having fun with the people. You can do that. You're a personable guy. You put the suit on, and they're already going to smile and laugh because it's kind of cheesy anyway. So it's like you give them that little bit of cheese to laugh at. They're waiting to kind of have fun. So you don't want to come in there and be over serious or trying to be this great Elvis. You know, I put on my shtick and I do what I do. But no matter what you do, they're going to have fun with it, you know?
You know, if Vegas TV wasn't off air right now.
You're off air all the time.
Yes, always. If we were still on Vegas TV, I would have 100% made you reenact this whole thing. And Kat, we would have had the minister be our producer, Steven, and Kat said we got married, I would have had you walk me down the aisle.
Uh-huh.
I would have. So you're, I'm very, even more disappointed that there is no station anymore for us to be on.
You know what? I want to add something else with the, since I had gotten the jumpsuit a while back, I thought, well, before I go working in the chapel, let me get some use out of this. And so I would do a quick change with the Swinging Pedestrians out on Fremont Street, go back there, and then they play, C.C. Rider, and ladies and gentlemen, here's Elvis Presley. I come out in the jumpsuit, and I sing, we do like Heartbreak Hotel, and then we did this version that I kind of introduced. And it's like, thank you very much. I want to thank the Swinging Pedestrians for having me up on stage with them. Elvis died in 1977, the same exact year that the Ramones came out. Well, coincidence? I think not. Here's a song that Elvis never sang, but he probably should have. I'm going to sing I Want to Be Sedated. And so Elvis sings this version of I Want to Be Sedated, but it's kind of mixed with Burning Love. It's got that feel to it.
I
changed the words to get me to McDonald's, order it to go.
I Want to Be Sedated was the thing that made Elvis not live past
exactly.
1977.
So it's this great twist on the
and
song.
And they make me not live past this interview.
Yeah. and the sedatedness. I mean, that's what kind of people think, and then mixing it with a hamburger or whatever. So it was like a little
that's
twist.
Very clever.
Very yeah. cute.
I want to roll back to the pedestrians. That is your.
Okay, I'll let it go. I'll let Elvis go.
Wait, are you saying Elvis has left the building? Is that Elvis?
The image of Elvis has left the building. Is on his way over to In-N-Out Burger.
Although it has not left my heart.
Now the pedestrians have the kind of what I'm thinking of is a Louis Prima kind of approach that you guys have. But you invoke burlesque dancing in the show at Sin City Theater.
Right. Right.
Now that's a whole different ballgame. You never did that before.
No, we actually have.
At the Palms, did you?
The Palms really didn't want burlesque, and I said, "Well, can we have our girls on stage with us?"
Oh, there was some dancing,
doing numbers with us. They said, "Yeah," they just didn't want the actual burlesque.
The stripping.
We did it there a couple times before, and they were like, "Eh, you know, they're a little freaky about it."
Right.
But that's the great thing about the Sin City Theater is that they do that every night of the week. Because in the comedy show, they have burlesque dancers in between the comics. So they embrace the fact that, oh, burlesque? Sure, bring it on. Mm-hmm. Pasties? Sure, bring it on. Because I don't have to twist somebody's arm to say, can we have our girls on stage now? They say, the more the better. So we have a total of our three. And then the burlesque show that's in between our sets, there's three more. So there's a total of six girls a night.
Wow.
And these girls with us on stage, I call them the Vegas Red Hots, our girls. They're on about every two or three songs doing a number with us. So it's basically like you get a swing dance number, you get a girl number, you get this, you get that, and free popcorn too. We just brought that free popcorn out.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Popcorn
is, and it's all for free.
I'll tell you the deal with that free popcorn. It's really salty, and it's not salty on accident. It's really salty.
Well, I need a drink.
Well, that's part of
that's
the idea.
Part of the deal.
But
man.
I mean, when you're sitting there watching a movie or a show or whatever, what better thing to have than some popcorn? That's kind of what goes.
Well, it's good if you want to throw something.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't go that far, and it doesn't hurt when
sit
it
up
hits.
Front.
Yeah.
You practically walk away with money in your pocket when you go see them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and a good experience too.
So. It is. Yeah. On top of everything.
Yeah. So yeah, we've always had the burlesque thing involved with us. I've tried to get it a little bit more and more because it's just it brings people out. And it kind of helps create a vibe. And I know most of the bands in town that are going to play at casinos and lounges and stuff, you know, a lot of the bookers, they have to have this female front singer. You know, everybody's got to have the girl in the band just for the eye candy part or whatever. Uh-huh. I mean, they're good singers, you know.
I'm available for backup. Did I say that?
And so I thought, well, we're not any girls up there and you can only look at us for so long. So how about we have girls on stage with us to help add that mix of, you know, guys and girls. So it's kind of a twist on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think of everything. I'm always planning and calculating things out.
You know? So now how are you going to work all of these identities and shows into a week?
Sometimes it's, you know, there's a couple of weeks coming up where I might be doing everything, you know, because I'm a Beatles, I'm a Ringo one night and Elvis another day and then the Pedestrians the next day and then might be Dean another day. And so it's like sometimes it all comes up and, you know, maybe even all in the same day. Who knows?
How long have you been doing the Ringo
role? As long as I don't show up to, you know, the chapel in my Ringo outfit or something.
Some
I'll be okay.
Like that.
We'll get married by Ringo.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can take us down.
Yeah.
Now.
I'm sorry. What was that?
I'd asked you about how long you've been Ringo in the Beatles show.
I came out here in 2005.
Okay.
At that time, the Fab Four had put together an outside group to be like the Vegas cast while they go touring, and we were basically like interchangeable. So me and the John Lennon and the Paul McCartney, actually, at the time, we all kind of moved out here from L.A., and so we lived here, and we were doing that six nights a week, and then we would sometimes interchange and go back and forth. So, you know, that brought me out here, and for a couple of years, I was just doing Ringo, and it's like, you know what, I'm a musician, I'm an entertainer, performer. Ringo's great, I love it, but I got to do a little bit more, so that's when I put the Pedestrians together back in 2008.
You've been around that long, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knocked around here and there and did a few different things with a lot of different band members and stuff. And so, you know, just tried different things. And so I started doing that. And then one thing led to another. And it's like, well, let me do this now. Let me do that now. You know, once doors open up and this is the land of opportunity and entertainment, you know.
Well, you know that Ringo is Katz's new friend.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you I interviewed Ringo down in L.A., out in L.A.
Oh.
Because he's going to be here on the 22nd.
Oh, when did you interview him?
I interviewed him
2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, 2.5 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went down there and talked to him.
Oh, wow. How was it to be in the presence of a Beatle?
It was pretty powerful, man. It was pretty powerful.
Wow.
But I you know, they had one thing about him, his drumming, one of the events, he did two events down there. Dave Grohl was there, and they interviewed him on a stage. They had also announced Ringo's book. He's got a new book called Photograph Out of All These Unpublished Photos of His Years growing up and with the Beatles, really cool stuff. So they were announcing the book, and they brought in Dave Grohl to talk about Ringo's drumming.
Wow.
And, you know, there's all this debate and conversation about how good Ringo is or is not.
Uh-huh.
And Grohl loves him. You know, he's the swinginest guy. Nobody's drums sounded like Ringo's. You know, he's the most famous drummer ever. He was just the personality type the band needed, all this stuff.
Right.
You play the role. I mean, how difficult is this?
It's, you know, all my life, we've all listened to the Beatles. You know, I've listened to the songs 100 times, but I never listened to it for the drums because I wasn't like trying to pick out the drums. Like you listen to, you know, a Led Zeppelin thing, you're listening to John Bonham or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But so when I had to be Ringo, it's like, well, let me start listening to the drum parts. And it was like, wow, there's really something to it, you know? And especially for back in the early 60s when he came out, there was nobody else playing like the way Ringo did. He was solid. He had a uniqueness about him. He had a swingy style.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
that's what he kept saying. He says, I swing. I'm not like a regular rock drummer.
Yeah.
He's and very intuitive.
Like all the fills on A Day in a Life and even on She Said, She Said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one. And I always tell people, it's like, if you want to get the Ringo style, just listen to what he's doing on She Said, She Said, because he's doing those fills like through the whole thing.
It's a song that changes tempo.
Yeah, and it's great. And there's so many people over the years that have come up and says, oh, you know, Ringo, he's a terrible drummer. It's like, well, you know, he wasn't a terrible drummer. He was very unique. And of course, he's overshadowed by, you know, you got John Lennon and Paul McCartney in the band. You're not going to get the front row seat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was nobody that could have been a better fit for the Beatles back then, because when Pete Best was with them, if you listen to some of that old stuff, he just didn't have that oomph, you know, and Ringo came in and just kind of laid it down. It was like, wow, this is great.
He's still playing it too.
And he's still doing it.
He's
so,
still doing it.
I've always been a fan, and that's actually how I got into being Ringo in the first place. I was playing in L.A. with a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young tribute band. I was playing drums with them.
Oh, my gosh. It keeps growing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, this is going. So I could even go on before that. But so there was two guys in the band, the David Crosby guy and the Graham Nash guy, that both had been in and still – one of them still is – in Beatle bands. And at the time, I was kind of combing my hair down. And I've always had Ringo's nose, and I've always kind of felt the drums like Ringo. I've always kind of played with a lot of Ringo isms. So they both had said, dude, you look and play like Ringo. You should get into one of these Beatle tribute acts, you know? And at the time, I was playing with like four different bands. And I says, I don't have time to get into another band besides.
The Rick Springfield tribute act wasn't working out.
And, you know, so, so I said, well, you know, sure. But the Graham Nash guy, who is the bass player in Led Zeppelin, you know, the Led Zeppelin.
They played it.
Jim Wooten, which I can even go farther than that. But he
all
told me.
All I think about is the Titanic.
He said,
when I hear Led Zeppelin.
Jim Wooten told me, he says, well, my friend that I went to high school with is in the Fab Four. He's a drummer, Rollo. He goes, I could tell you, mention him to you because, you know, you'd be a good Ringo. I said, sure. If it's the Fab Four, they're, you know, one of the big ones out there. Sure. Why not get in on the, you know, the big ones like that. So I got a call from them. They says, yeah, you're in. Jim said you'd be good. So it's like, okay, I guess I'm in. And, you know, one thing led to another. I got my Beatle boots and my wigs and whatever and started doing it.
The rest is history.
And that's what got me out to here. So it was thanks to Jim Wooten getting me in. Otherwise, I may not be sitting here. I might be sitting over there, right there.
Well, now we can now say that you will be seen in just about every show as everybody all over Las Vegas coming up. And
yeah, and also on TV. If you saw me on Counting Cars a few months ago, they show the reruns a lot. So you know that show, Counting Cars.
Yeah.
So
Danny Counts.
Yeah.
Who does?
So
that.
I was on that too.
Well, we have to say we're coming to a close. So
already.
We have to say thank you. Thank you very much.
It seemed like time flew by just like that.
Tony Felicita from Swinging Pedestrians, Tuesdays at Sin City Theater at Miracle Mile Shops, 10:30. Yeah. They tee it up, 10:30 to 1 a.m., right?
12:30.
Yeah.
And also as Elvis at a wedding chapel.
And soon to be Dean Martin and, you know, all that other stuff. So I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you, Johnny Katz.
Anytime, my
appreciate
brother.
Appreciate it. All right.